They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Crossover NBA Podcast. Glad you could join me this week. And it got a little wilder earlier on Monday when the report came out via ESPN that Anthony Davis has requested a trade from the New Orleans Pelicans. He wants out, and now we have the Anthony Davis sweepstakes set to officially begin. To talk about that and a few other things going on in the NBA, my pleasure to welcome back Brian Scalabrine, the great NBA analyst for NBA Radio, Sirius XM, NBA Radio. You can hear him mornings there. You can see him on NBC Sports Boston on the Celtics broadcast. What's up, Scal?
Things are going well. So, Chris, where does this show me the money for this podcast?
Because
you've always came through in the past, but what is the now show me the money?
Well, when I see you, I have a fresh bag of underwear. That
like MeUndies?
Yes, I believe that.
Nice.
They're down the line. They're down the line. So I was told you wear extra small, and I got a,
Whoa! Are we going there this early? Jeez.
A little punchy this morning. This day
right.
Started early for me, Scout. It started,
I know.
It started
when
early
that
for
news,
you, too. But.
When the news broke, it kind of broke the internet.
It
and
did.
And it's great that like LeBron James could talk without even saying a word. It's unbelievable.
It's wild. All right, so give me your first reaction when you saw the news that a couple of weeks before the trade deadline, Anthony Davis was making his official trade demand.
All right, so first I thought, why would New Orleans do this? Now, this sucks because clearly, so Justin, I want to be transparent with all you guys out there. I want Anthony Davis to come to Boston, of course. I'm sitting there calling games. Why would I not want to call games with Anthony Davis? So I first initially thought this is no news, because why would New Orleans do something like this now when they can wait till the off season? And just like, how informed are your listeners? Everyone probably knows that the Celtics cannot trade for Anthony Davis at this point because of the Kyrie Irving contract. Now, we can get into that if you want, but I don't. Just understand that the Celtics are not a part of this conversation. And you think LeBron knows that? Absolutely, he knows that. So I start going through the Lakers. I start going through the players. And I start going through the most important thing, which is the expiring contracts that they have. And actually, after I looked at it, they have a pretty decent amount of pieces that they can send New Orleans way if New Orleans is looking to also dump a few salaries. So they can get a bunch of young players, they can get really lean, and they can get future draft picks. And then at the end of the day, and I think the Lakers are the only team that is actually able to trade for Anthony Davis right now, because I'm assuming that Rich Paul would say to all the other teams, all the other 28 teams that are available out there, my client is not re-signing with you, which significantly lowers like the prospects that you will get.
Yes, Anthony Davis has a lot of power in this situation. And my first reaction was that this was all tailored towards the L.A. Lakers, that this was now giving the Lakers a two-week head start. Because, Scal, there was a way that Anthony Davis could have handled this where he might have avoided being the villain in New Orleans. I think that matters to him. I think his image in that area, I think it matters to him. He could have played out this season, gone into July, and just simply rejected that Supermax contract extension.
Sure.
Because if you do, that has the same result as a trade demand. Because
agreed.
The team cannot keep him around. He could have done all that, but because there's, I think, an emphasis, at least within his team, to try to get him to the Lakers, this trade demand came about now. Because they know, as you said, because of the rule that says you can't have two players with the type of contracts that Kyrie Irving and Anthony Davis have, the Celtics cannot get into the mix, at least not realistically, until this offseason. This was tailored entirely for the Lakers. But to me, Scal, why? Even if you think Anthony Davis really wants to be in L.A., if you're Dell Demps, the GM of the Pelicans, why in a million years would you make a deal before July 1st? This trade, This is Herschel Walker. This is probably going to be the biggest trade in NBA history when it comes to what assets are coming back that we've ever seen. Biggest trade. So why, even if you think it's unlikely Anthony Davis will accept a trade to Boston, why would you take Boston, which we both know is desperate to get Anthony Davis, why would you take them out of the equation? If they make this deal before the deadline, to me, it's almost malpractice by Dell Demps in that organization.
Now, this is what you just said. Watch me change your mind.
Okay.
So the Lakers have expiring deals. Caldwell Pope. You know you can't trade Caldwell Pope at the end of the year, right?
Right.
You have expiring Lance Stephenson, Michael Beasley. Like, all these little contracts that add up that you will not be able to move later. So if New Orleans, now here's where I'm not sure about New Orleans and what they want to do. Do they want to get ultra lean, or do they want to try to compete? I don't know. I don't know, because I also feel, and I'll get back to my point in a second, I also feel like Dell Demps, by doing this, is sort of signing his death warrant. So why is he going to like do this trade so the next guy looks like a genius when all these players end up being really good? So I do think there's a little bit of, if I trade Anthony Davis and they fire me, all I'm doing is trading it for the next guy. There is job preservation going on here. But here's the reason why New Orleans makes that deal now. Because at the deadline, whether it be at the offseason, whether it be the Celtics or New Orleans, they just don't have that much salary to shed. So it's like, you can't add up the numbers to make him high enough to take on like a Drew Holiday and a Solomon Hill and maybe throw in an Etuan Moore in that. So how lean does New Orleans want to get? If you start adding up all these pieces, New Orleans could shed all kinds of contracts, take on a bunch of expirings, and then have a bunch of assets moving forward. And that is the only reason why you make the trade now. Because, by the way, it would also screw the Lakers moving forward. Now, I'm not saying the Lakers would do this, but it would screw the Lakers moving forward in going out there and signing another marquee name. Because now that guy could be just Drew Holiday, Solomon Hill, and Etuan Moore. So I don't know what they want to do, New Orleans. I don't know if Dell Demps wants to sign his death warrant. But I do know this. If they want to get ultra, ultra lean, ultra lean, going into free agency, going into selling the team, then I would believe that they would make the trade before the deadline. Now, well, did I convince you a good reason why?
No, you didn't.
Jeez. I thought you would be all over New Orleans, like hitting the restart button and going like, I'm talking $80 million or I'm just saying really lean, as in not having any bad contracts on the books.
I am in favor of that. In fact, I think that in a weird way, this could turn out to be great for New Orleans.
So do I.
Because, I mean, what has the Anthony Davis era yielded them to this point? It's gotten them into the playoffs once and smoked in the first round by Golden State.
No, they got it twice.
Sorry.
And then they went to the second round.
Sorry, you're right. I forgot my last year.
But that was like, a lot of that was, to me, Rajon Rondo, which they lost because they're a small market and Rondo went to L.A.
Exactly. Okay, so you have two playoff appearances with Anthony Davis. And I'm not putting any of this on Anthony Davis because the Pelicans have mismanaged their way to this point.
100%.
You know, being a successful team, and especially a successful small market team, they're really, it's not rocket science. You either hit on your draft picks or you don't. And Oklahoma City and San Antonio, more often than not, they hit on their draft picks. Memphis and New Orleans, they either miss on their draft picks, like the Grizzlies have over the years, or they trade away their draft picks, like New Orleans has over the years, to try to get established talent. That's number one. One of the reasons not to go ultra lean and bottom out this season is that there's a pretty broad consensus, Scal, from what I hear, that this year's draft, the 2019 draft, is not a particularly deep one and is not an extraordinarily talented one. So if you're going to bottom out before the trade deadline, ostensibly to get a high draft pick in June, maybe this really isn't the year to do it. Now, you mentioned Dell Demps. I think his death warrant's already signed as the general manager of the Pelicans. I don't – look, Mickey Loomis, who has got a lot of power there in New Orleans with the Saints and with the Pelicans, he's come out and said it last summer, it's time to win. They're not winning. And you and I both know Dell Demps has been in trouble at various times over the last few years. I don't think he survives this one way or the other. And if he's not going to be your long-term general manager, is there not – isn't it smart on in some level – to let him go at the end of the season and then bring in a new GM who would deal with this, the guy that's going to chart the course for your franchise going forward to deal with this, doesn't that have some value to the Pelicans?
It does, but not if they want to get lean. It doesn't. So let me just ask you this question.
Okay.
Would you want to involve Drew Holiday in this trade if you're at New Orleans? Do you want Anthony Davis, Kuzma, Ball, Ingram, Andrew Holiday, or would you like to get off that $100 million owed to him?
I think you get off that if you can.
Okay,
yes.
So the only way they can get off that is now, not later, because there's just not enough salary. Everyone is positioning themselves. Like, Davis is at 25, Holiday at 25. That means you got to send off about 40-something million dollars. The only way you do that is you do it before the deadline, because guess what? The Lakers are preserving space. So they don't have the salaries to move. So if and once again, you have to understand the power structure. If Rich Paul says to every other team, we're not trading him, he's not going to re-sign with you, then the Lakers are your only option, then guess what? The ticking time bomb, which is 11 days away from the trade deadline, is our only chance to get lean. Because you tell me, what is the value of Drew Holiday if it's not attached to Anthony Davis? You tell me. Is someone willing to take on $100 million Drew Holiday and then give back nothing? Give back only young players and assets or expirings? Maybe someone would. I don't know the value of him. I love Drew Holiday, so I can't understand if a team wants him or doesn't. Likes that number, doesn't like that number. I know the team that's willing to take on that number, and I know the team that can do it right now. That is the Lakers. That's it. Nobody else can take on that. The Celtics won't take on Drew Holiday's $25 million contract. I guarantee you that. So the only team that's able to do that is the Lakers. LeBron knows this. Rich Paul knows this. They are going to put the screws to Dell Demps right now and force him to make the trade if New Orleans wants to get lean, which I don't even know if they do or don't.
Okay, let me ask you this then. You say that you want to attach that Holiday contract to Anthony Davis. Why can't you do that on July 1st?
To who?
Into that Lakers space is what I'm saying. Why is this? Why wouldn't the Lakers take him on July 1st? You're assuming that they're going to get somebody this summer. I survey the landscape often. I mean, I did a lot with Kawhi Leonard. I've looked at the Jimmy Butler stuff, the Durant stuff. I'm not sure I'd say the Lakers are a favorite to get anybody at this point when you talk about the top-tier free agents.
Does it change? Does it change if you have Anthony Davis? It has to.
Change.
If you're a young player, I tell you, let me tell you, I'm in Boston right now, and I love Kyrie. I love watching him. I want to watch him for the next 5 years. Like, all of a sudden, I'm like, he's coming back. He's re-signing. I feel 100% confident in that, unless Anthony Davis goes to L.A. And now I am, my stomach turns because I'd be worried about that. I would worry. He's already doubled down on saying he's going to come back, but I know you know this. I don't know if the people know this. Like, him and Anthony Davis are boys.
Yes.
I think they text, like, every day. When I say they're boys, I think they're boys. So I'd be really worried about that. And so what? You got to go back and, you called LeBron the other day and hey, I'm looking how to be a leadership. I had to apologize and all this stuff. Like, that starts to get my stomach, like, really upset.
Yeah.
So I just think – and you're right. If the Lakers do it right, they could absorb the Drew Holiday stuff later. It's just, but then I'm wondering, without that, I wonder how much assets are you willing to give up to get them? And maybe you're right. Maybe New Orleans could wait. But for me, I'd be like, man, do I really want to get lean? I can get lean right now. You have a chance right now, and Boston's not the Lakers have to, I think, sell the farm, every young asset they have, picks moving forward, right to swaps moving forward. That's a lot of things that they would have to give up to get them. And you could take on the Solomon Hill, and you could take on the Etuan Moore, basically trading New Orleans' whole team, and then you add LeBron to the mix.
And the Pelicans separately, even before the deadline, well, before the deadline, they could make deals for Mirotić, who has value, I think,
correct,
potentially for a first-round pick. And you could make a deal for Julius Randle, who I think has value on the trade market this offseason.
I hate to admit it because I want Anthony Davis to be in Boston. And especially after what I saw on Saturday, like the Celtics need Anthony Davis to ever like put that banner up there, you know, to beat a Golden State this season. You know, I know it can't happen, but it's like I thought the Celtics were a little bit closer to Golden State than what I saw on Saturday. But and Davis to me is the answer, no question about it. It does make when this came out and you start looking at the salaries, you start looking at New Orleans, you start wondering what they're going to do. It really makes me a little uneasy. And my opinion is I actually think he's going to end up in L.A., which sounds nuts. On before the trade deadline, which is February 7th. Is that correct, Chris?
Yeah, February 7th. Yeah. They moved it up this year. What do you think? Let me ask you about the Celtics. What do you think they're feeling in their front office right now? And do you think that they can be scared off by Rich Paul?
You mean by him saying he's not going to re-sign with you?
Basically, yeah. Because there are other ways to find things
they got
out.
They got the bat phone. There's like the Rich Paul, and then Kyrie has like the red phone. Hey.
Yeah.
Kyrie, what do you need? I just need you to be honest with me. So I'm they're not scared by Rich Paul. If they didn't have that relationship, or if Kyrie wasn't here, I'd be like, yeah, of course you'd be scared off by Rich Paul. Mm-hmm. I know everyone hates it that Rich Paul has all this power, but the reality is he does.
Yeah. So what do you think they're when this happens now, what do you think the front office is thinking? Do you think they're worried that a deal gets done before the deadline? Do you think that – and the other question is too, Scal – you know, if Boston, we've always said this, if Boston really wants somebody, they can go get him. They've just got too many assets they can deal. When, you know, the top tier guy is Jason Tatum when it comes to assets and the draft picks. That Memphis pick, by the way, that could turn out to be like solid gold for some team. Memphis is in line to be horrible the next couple of years. And that pick goes unprotected in 2021. We don't know what it's going to look like then, but that could be an incredibly valuable pick. I mean, if Anthony Davis is... if he's truly available and he's willing to commit, I don't think there's any limit to where Boston will go outside of not trading Kyrie Irving.
I agree with that. I think they'll do anything it takes to get him. And I think New Orleans knows that. You know, but once again, it's just a matter of, are they going to get press these next 11 days? Can they sustain it? The backlash, New Orleans and Anthony Davis. And is he going to, you know, I kind of assume that Anthony Davis at any point could say my back hurts or my leg hurts, my knee hurts. Like, he's always hurt, so I could totally see him doing that if he really does want to get to the Lakers. But I think what makes everyone uneasy about this is the reality that Davis and Rich Paul and LeBron James, in a weird puppeteer type of way, has all the control in this situation. Lakers, I mean, I think the Celtics are basically holding their breath for the next 11 days, hoping that nothing happens.
I think I think if you're ownership, if you're Mickey Loomis, you've got to just kind of, what's that phrase? Close your eyes and think of England. Just quietly.
Why? You're going to lose them anyways.
No, I know, but I just believe that the offers are either going to be the same or significantly better if you wait until July 1st. I think there's no downside to waiting. And there's a pretty steep downside if you don't. And a deal of this magnitude, and think about it, a deal like this, if you get the right package, maybe you reinvigorate the team. Maybe you become like the Celtics of last year in some way with young pieces and guys playing good basketball. Maybe not to the level of which the Celtics played, but maybe you have kind of new hope for the franchise. You screw it up, and maybe it's the Seattle Pelicans in a few years.
Sure.
Like that's the... I mean, this is a team that's in some peril there, given how they're relatively unsupported. They don't make a lot of money down there.
All right. So that, once again, I thought exactly the same thing you thought. But why we have a different conclusion is confusing. Because if you're Dell Demps and you think, if I trade him in the offseason, I'm dead. Agree or disagree?
He may not even get the chance to trade him in the offseason.
Okay. But if I trade him now and we get magic in a bottle, let's just say the Celtics of what do you call it, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Well,
Young,
even last year. No Kyrie, no Gordon Hayward. What if, like, Ball, Ingram, just like absolutely, or and Kuzma go out there and they ball out. I mean, I'm talking ball out, like fight, and like you, like everyone starts to fall in love with this team. Doesn't that give you an opportunity to preserve your job? Isn't that more of a lifeline than trading Davis in the offseason and like,
yes,
playing this
yes,
year
but,
out?
But here's where we disagree. I don't think ownership should let him do it. I don't think – I think the people above Dell Demps should say, no way.
I see. Okay.
This is too important for us to make a deal for this guy in the next 11 days. Let me just ask you this to finish on this topic. The Laker players – you know, it's almost
good call, Chris.
It's almost assumed there's a hierarchy here, right? It's like, well, Brandon Ingram was the number two pick a couple of years back. He's the best player. Then there's Lonzo. Then there's Kuzma. It might even be reversed. Like, Kuzma might have the most value in a trade with Ball and Ingram kind of fighting for number two. What do you think of the players and their potential?
You mean as basketball players or what they're thinking right now?
I mean, everybody talks about the Lakers, the players they could throw in the deal. You know, if you're ranking, you know, in a Boston versus L.A. players only type of deal, you know, Tatum's clearly number one if that's included in the mix.
Yeah.
But I don't know what to make of the Lakers players and their potential there.
Well, here's the thing about the Lakers. I think that Magic is willing to placate LeBron. So I actually believe that all three of those guys would be in the deal. I know.
I agree, but
crazy.
How good are they? Like,
I mean, good enough to take on three guys. I mean, I like them. I think all three of them have potential to be really good. I think Kuzma's really good. I think Ball's good. I think Ingram's still like on the up and coming. They're all on rookie scales. You get a little time to kind of look and decide which ones you like. And so, if you said Tatum and picks, well, it'd be like, I guess. How did the Celtics get to $19 million? Tatum and Smart?
Smart. It's got to be Smart. And we both know that's one of the reasons that Boston gave Marcus Smart the money they did, which they didn't really have to at that point. They needed a mid-level contract, something they could deal in a trade like this.
So Tatum, Smart, and picks versus those three guys? Yeah, I guess. I guess that's – I think this Tatum could be a star. But, like, a lot of people – so I just got done with the radio show before I jumped on with you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think, like, what's the difference between Ingram and Tatum? A lot of people on the, like, callers, and they recognize that Tatum is better. But if you're getting Kuzma, Ball, and Ingram, is that better than Smart and Tatum? I don't know.
I think Tatum's the only guy in that group that I think can be a franchise player.
You do.
I do. I think he's the only one. I think Ingram could be a good scorer and a secondary scorer. Kuzma is more interesting to me. I mean,
yeah, I like Kuzma a lot.
Didn't he score like 50 plus in one game? Like it was like he's got ridiculous scoring potential. And Ball, bit of a wild card. You also have to factor in like the family part of it. If you trade Ball,
I don't think that's an issue anymore.
Maybe it's not an issue in L.A.
So.
It's not an issue in L.A. I don't know if it's an issue somewhere else.
Yeah. It probably just will bring more attention to the team and like people would actually go and see him. You know, like I wish this happened and I was like, man, no way. They're not going to do this. I just like deep down inside, Chris, I think they're going to do it. I do. I don't know why I think that. I just think that the Lakers are going to shower them with like a like the Celtic Brooklyn type of trade with like right to swaps and unprotecteds moving forward. And I'm like really nervous that Davis is going to end up in LA because if something like this happened, I have a feeling somebody on the upper management has had this conversation. I'm just really worried that Davis is going to end up in LA.
That's interesting because I think that if they make this deal before the deadline, everybody should be fired. Everybody. Ownership, fire yourself for making
really?
A deal. This it's just there's too much at stake and too big a potential offer in July. Why you play teams against each other. The best LA versus Boston battle we've seen in years could be for Anthony Davis. Like this is
that's a great call, right?
It's a no-brainer.
ESPN should start running commercials on that, right?
We got the Celtics versus the Lakers is coming up, what, in like two weeks? Like, this should be the subplot of it. Ainge
versus
Magic.
Lakers.
Yeah, it's Ainge versus Magic in the real battle.
So true, right? Oh. You have, like, you know how they bring up, like, Kyrie, LeBron? They'll bring up Ainge Magic versus. They'll have all this drama. That'd be so great.
Incredible. All right, let me pivot here for a second. You mentioned you watched, you know, being there for the Celtics against the Warriors game. We don't have to go too far back into that game. Couple takeaways, though, from that game and what came out of that game. And Gordon Hayward is interesting. Did not have a good game against against Golden State. Has had some good games this year. Had a 35-point performance. Had his first career triple-double. But has had some real clunkers along the way as he's tried to come back from that that catastrophic injury last year. Jeff Goodman, who we know has been covering basketball for a long time, he quoted an anonymous Warriors player saying that Gordon Hayward was a liability on both ends of the floor. Give me your thoughts on that and just a general overview of how you see Hayward playing right now.
I think, and here's what I want. Like, everyone knows, I don't know if everyone knows this. He just had his third child on Thursday. And yeah. I recognize that he didn't deliver the baby, but it was the worst game I've seen him play in Boston. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean like he's a bad player. It just means he had a bad game against Golden State. And when the only issue with Gordon Hayward is what the Celtics want from him is for him to be middle of the road. They want him to be solid playmaker, defensively holding his own, like being a solid player. But what the end result has been since he's coming back from this injury, which is like, I guess it's kind of expected, is he's like really good and he's really bad. And he's not less of those like middle of the road games. I don't want to say really bad. He's just like average player, or he's really good. And sometimes, like the other night, it was the worst game I've seen him play. He was out of sorts, 100% out of sorts. He couldn't like not shoot shots, not play defense. It was the ball would come to him on a rebound, and he would like bobble it out of his hand. So I'm just chalking that up as like a bad time to have a really bad game.
Yeah, yeah. And here's the thing I hear about when I talk to some people there about Hayward. First, he's healthy. Like, there's no injury issue right now when it comes to Gordon Hayward. No complications, no soreness, anything like that. He is healthy, at least from what the people that I talk to say. He's going through some stuff, though. Like, from the start of the season, all the guys on this team have been trying to figure out what their identity is. They've been trying to figure out how to make it work within this group. Gordon Hayward has had to do that and had to get his own rhythm and timing back. So he's kind of had the double whammy scale all season long. He's had his role changed from a starter to a bench player for the first time in a very long time. And I just think he's still trying to figure out exactly how he fits in while he's trying to get his explosiveness back, which I don't think is all the way there, and his ability to kind of cut and make those hard moves that we saw in Utah. So I think he's dealing with two things, whereas everybody else this year, somewhat successfully, somewhat not, has been dealing with one.
I do agree with that, but you've seen so many games where makes a bunny, pull-up jumper, makes a layup, and then he like transformed into a completely different player. On that night, was he trying to figure all that stuff out? Like, what happens on those nights, Chris? Like, how do you chalk that up? Because I don't know. I think he's a guy that's like, when he's obviously has like the baseline of being a great player. So when his confidence and his rhythm is there, he's a great player. But then there's other nights where he like cannot find his rhythm at all. And maybe he's second-guessing, and he's probably thinking, like, why am I in Boston? And I can't believe it hasn't worked out the way I wanted it to. I need more looks. It's just, but, yeah, I think there's going to be ups and downs with him if he didn't even have the injury just because, like, he's having a hard time, like, fitting into this new system.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he is frustrated by what his body is not allowing him to do right now? Because I see him get to the basket at times, Scal, and he makes moves that you would see in Utah where he'd finish with a dunk. And a lot of times when he's trying to finish, he's either laying it up or missing a shot because he can't elevate at that same level right now. I don't see
mental
the same explosiveness.
Mental?
Physical. Well, no.
Wow.
Well, I don't want to say physical because I just said he's healthy, but there's a difference between being healthy and being back to the player you once were.
Sure.
And I think there's a physical part to that.
Sure. I think it's mental. I think it's 80-20. I think there's a physical component to it, no question about it, because mentally you haven't got the confidence enough. But like when he goes to jump off that left leg, it's not there.
Yeah.
So it's just – I think that when he goes to the basket, he's just a fraction of what he used to be, which used to actually was part of the reason why he's great was his athleticism. which like people, I don't know if they get it because like the whole like he's a white guy, but he's actually a freak of nature athletically when he was in Utah. I'm talking guys bouncing off him, him elevating, him throwing down on guys. He's nowhere near that at this point. So he has to rely more on skill, which doesn't this look very similar to Paul George when he first came back?
Yep.
And he's like a fraction of what he was athletically. And now how many years has it been? And by the way, I was completely wrong about Paul George this year. How many years has it been where Paul George was a fraction of the player he once was until now, where he actually looks like he's better than what he once was?
Yeah, Paul George benefited greatly from coming back at the end of that season where he suffered the injury just the year before. But he got hurt in August at the USA basketball stuff. He came back at the very end of last year, and he was only playing 10 or 15 minutes per game down the stretch. I think it was like 6 or 7 games. Yeah. But he got kind of a taste of NBA basketball again, and then he had the full offseason to work himself back into game shape. Gordon Hayward really hasn't had that. The setbacks he had along the way, the multiple surgeries. He didn't start playing, as you know, Scout, 5-on-5 until I think early September.
Yeah.
You know, he just hasn't had the time needed to get your rhythm back after that injury. So
yeah, and I think anybody in the medical community would say it's amazing that he's able to do this right now. But fans and, you know, like other players, I think he'll be fine next year. I think he'll have some good games this year. I think he'll get his confidence, and the other days he'll have games like – I don't think we'll see what we saw in Golden State. He looked like he didn't belong there, but there are other times where he looks like a stud. He's a game changer when he's playing at that high level for the Celtic team. And I in a messed up way, after watching that game, I believed this before. Now I truly believe this. Celtics want to win, want to be in a conversation for a championship, want to be in a conversation to go up to Toronto and beat them. Mm-hmm. Like Gordon Hayward better be special. Not good, not average, not okay, special. He needs to like dial into those moments where he's really good. That's where I'm at right now with this Celtic team. I think he's a big part of them. And I also think Brad Stevens thinks that. And that's why he's kind of like force feeding him, trying to get him going, because he recognizes that the difference maker is Gordon Hayward playing good.
All right, so let me ask you about Golden State, who you saw play the other night. And they have DeMarcus Cousins now back into the mix. He's only playing 15, 20-ish types of minutes per game. But from what you saw from Cousins, give me what he can add and tell me where he's still going to be limited for the rest of the year.
He was better defensively than I thought. He did. That was not even a factor last game. I guess he understands space. I saw him pick Kyrie Irving one time. So I thought I was going to be like, watch this. Cousins is going to get busted defensively. He was actually really good on the defensive end. The Warriors don't skip a beat on defense, which I always thought that was going to be a problem. It was a problem a little bit with Zaza Pachulia. They had to kind of placate his limitations defensively. Don't seem to be the case with Cousins. And then offensively, the guy's going to get one-on-one coverage in a post, and he's going to score. And then he also can knock down the three. This is like – I thought it was like a single, maybe a double for the Warriors. I think it's a home run now at $5 million.
Yeah, he's shooting 55% from three in the first four games back.
Is there any chance, Chris, that like this thing goes sideways for him? Like he's like – I can't imagine it does.
Not this year.
Is there any chance that that happens?
Not this year.
I don't think so either.
He knows – that, look, for him to get his money this offseason, all he has to do is keep playing like this, you know, for the rest of the year. Like, play 20, 25 minutes. Nobody in the NBA is going to say, look, you only played 20 minutes per game. Coming off an Achilles injury, if he keeps playing at this level, somebody is going to give him close to the money that he wants this offseason. Now, where he brings real value is if you look, you mentioned the defensive side. Look, the Warriors were a surprisingly good rebounding team even before Cousins came into the lineup. Where they struggled was giving up points in the paint. And putting Cousins in there as a shot blocker and a space filler, I think that's going to bring real value on the defensive end of the floor, especially when he's only replacing like Kevin Looney and, you know, Jordan Bell when he's been healthy. Like, this is I'm with you. If it's not a home run, it's at least a triple for this team to have this guy in there for 20, 25 minutes per game.
Yeah, like if it wasn't unfair already.
Yeah, I think it's a wrap.
I will say this. Seeing a team live, you recognize how good they are, first and foremost. Like, I thought everyone can say, like, the game was closer than it was, a four-point game, whatever. They're better. The gap is bigger than I thought. Then, and number two, there is some bad body language going on there as well, stuff I haven't seen before. A lot of it does point to Kevin Durant, but we'll see. Again, all that stuff about being friends and stuff like that, it could just be about chips and making and getting as many championships as you can and making as much money as you possibly can, which makes the most sense to Golden State. But I do see, like, there was a lot of, like just a lot of shaking heads, bad body language, rolling the eyes that I thought, that's all kind of drama that I don't catch on TV. When you're live and you see it, it kind of reminds you that he might not be there next year.
Yeah, I think there's a very high chance that we're seeing the swan song for this team, with this group anyway, with Kevin Durant as a part of it. But even if the chemistry isn't great, there's still way too much talent for them to be stopped. You know, beating them 4 out of 7, I just don't see how it's going to happen in the playoffs.
Neither do I.
All right, let me finish with this gal, James Harden. I was down in Houston this past weekend getting my first in-person James Harden experience watching him play. And he's putting up some wild, wild scoring numbers. 30-plus points per game with ease. He had 61, the franchise record against the Knicks. Watching James Harden play, what stood out to you? We've seen him be a high-level scorer before. Anything different about this stretch?
No, that it's... Like, before, it was kind of amusing that he could do that, and there'd be times where he misses 5 shots in a row or whatever. Like, how is he that much better than everybody else in the NBA? I just don't get it. How are you that much better at scoring, shooting, step backs, off the dribble than anybody else in the league? And it is kind of remarkable. I said it last year, he's the best one-on-one player I've ever seen in a game. And that's also kind of like a knock, like, who really wants to? You can't win being a one-on-one player. It doesn't work in the NBA. It's never worked in the NBA. It's more about the team and this and movement. But, I mean, what he's seeing right now has changed my entire perception on what is possible. I think when people saw Steph Curry that year and do what he did, he won the MVP. And then I think James Harden just took that same thing and took it to a whole new level. He's a mismatch when you have your best defensive player on him and you have a matchup where he goes delayed isolation and he's going up against the clock. He still has a significant advantage over your team. So the best offensive player I've ever seen, bar none. And I can't understand how anybody can even debate that.
I was at the Raptors game on Friday, and you're watching the game, and that was a game they led wire to wire. You know, it got kind of funky at the end, but they led start to finish. And as I'm thinking about, like, I was going to write about Harden, but here's Kenneth Faried with, like, 21-14. Let's write a little bit about him. And, you know, P.J. Tucker with 4 3-pointers in the first half. You can write about his impact there. Then you look at the stat sheet at the end, I'm like, how the hell did James Harden at 35? Like,
I know.
How did that happen?
Like, I know. It's ridiculous.
He's not even the story, and he has 35. I mean, I've never seen a player, and I'm being more anecdotal and maybe a little hyperbolic, but I've never seen a player get to the free throw line as effortlessly as Harden does. His ability to use his body and contort it to create contact that referees will blow the whistle on is just remarkable. I mean, 25 attempts against the Knicks, 15 against the Raptors, only 9 against Orlando. I mean, he's just remarkable at getting to the basket, drawing contact, and making sure that the referees call it. I've honestly never seen anything like it.
Yeah, and it also, Chris, the way the rules are now, it does help. He's unstoppable with the new rules. And you can't even, like, basically, don't get into a guy's airspace to challenge him on a 3. But if you give him a wide-open shot, he's going to make it. Mm-hmm. So when you say it's effortless for him to get to the free throw line, it is also a little bit of the rules have changed significantly in the last 3 years. Now, he's the best one-on-one player I've ever seen because I can't imagine what it would be like for Jordan to play in this era or Allen Iverson to play in this era. I can't imagine you ever stopping these guys without being able to touch them. But it doesn't take away from he is the best offensive player I've ever seen, given the rules of the game.
He extends those arms so well, Scal, that he just creates, maybe a better way to put it is he creates more opportunity for contact than any player. I mean, he's, you have to defend those shots when he's kind of putting his arms out there and flipping it towards the rim. He's got one of the best floaters I've seen in a while, too. I mean, that left-handed floater is ridiculous. He was lighting up the Raptors with it over and over again in the second half of that game. He's just, I'm with you, just a remarkable offensive player from every angle.
Unguardable with the rules nowadays. Unguardable. Yeah. Now, will the playoffs be more physical or not? I don't know. Like, no one knows that. I don't even think, maybe Adam Silver knows. And maybe the referees
I tell you what, I watched, there were three consecutive plays over a two-minute span where Harden didn't get a call, and they were borderline. Like, I've never seen a coach have a 120-second meltdown in the way Mike D'Antoni did. Like, yeah. He was just losing his mind on the sideline for two consecutive minutes. Like, he's got Harden's back on all this. Like, he's now, just right there.
Once again, does it – is it going to be like that in the playoffs? I don't know. You have to tell me. I have the league has gone the furthest. Like, the points of emphasis usually last, like, 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
It is now 4 months in, and they are still calling all the ticky-tacky fouls. Does it all of a sudden stop in the playoffs? I don't think it does. I think in a way, we're going to see one of like the great all-time playoff performances from an individual moving forward. And you know what they're going to do with Steph Curry? They're going to end up with Steph Curry on James Harden, and they're going to ISO to death. And he might have 50-50-50, 60-40. And who's to say? Because his offense is just as dangerous as the Warrior offense. If you can't touch him and it's not physical like the playoffs.
Oh, even if Steph's not on him, they'll guard screen at the top. They'll find a way to
get
Steph on him the entire time. But let me ask you about the Rockets. You know, for the last couple of months, we've kind of looked at them and said, well, they're not as strong as last year. Last year, they were a game away from knocking off Golden State before the Chris Paul injury. They let some key pieces go, Trevor Ariza, Luke Mbah-Mute. We thought they took a step back. But I'll tell you, the additions they've made, the scrap heap type of guys, Kenneth Faried could barely get off the bench in Brooklyn. He's starting with the Rockets and looking like the same guy we saw in Denver a few years back. Austin Rivers, another guy. You know, he was okay in Washington. They let him go after the trade in Phoenix. He's starting, right? Well, at least he was before Chris Paul comes back. He was starting and playing well, bringing kind of a defensive mindset to that backcourt. All of a sudden, Scal, I see Chris Paul back. I see Clint Capella on the mend. I see Faried and Rivers. I'm starting to wonder if this team can be as formidable in the playoffs as they were last year.
You know they can. You know they're a big worry for everybody out there, especially the Golden State Warriors, because that James Harden.
I didn't think that a month ago, though. I didn't think that a month ago either.
But it's not a fluke. Like, what James Harden is doing offensively is not a fluke. And it's not inconceivable to think that he can average 50 in a series. That's not crazy to think that. As it used to be in the past, like, oh, my God, no one would be able to do that. I actually think that he could do that. I think he could average 50 points a game for a series in the playoffs, and it could be enough to beat you because of the guys that you mentioned. And those guys are just going to go out there and they're going to play their butts off, and then they're going to make open shots when they get them. And they seem to be fine with this role, not complaining that they don't get more touches or anything like that. They have this unique system where you're taking bad shots and you're making them at a high clip, and that's totally fine with what they do. So as a coach, are you adjusting to a guy like Harden who's taking bad shots and making them, but it's along the way, you can't leave the rest of those guys open? They're a bigger threat than people want to make it out to being.
Can Kenneth Faried, like, win most improved player from the first half of the season? Like, his second half be the most improved from the first half? I don't know where this guy came from. Like, this, the last few years, injuries have bothered him. He couldn't play for Brooklyn for some reason. And here he is. He had 12-10 against Orlando, 21-14 against the Raptors. I mean, he's everywhere. That Toronto game, Scal, he was legit everywhere. He was blocking shots. He was running the floor. And he is like the perfect player to play alongside Harden, because every time Harden goes to the rim, Faried dives. And he's just there waiting to catch one of those dump-offs from James Harden. it was one of the. I don't know what happens to the trade deadline. It could be busy. We could see some big moves, but if we don't, that could turn out to be the most significant transaction of the season.
Yeah, and it works because James Harden, like, if he has the ball in his hands 100 possessions, he's making like the right play 98 times out of 100, and including all those bad shots that he takes that he happens to make. So, James, I hope that this is also a unanimous MVP because this I don't think it's even close. Yeah, as much as I love Giannis, I think this is ridiculous.
I've started to think about that more and more because I'm a voter and – you know, people, when he started this streak, people were like, is he the MVP? I'm like, the usage rate's really high. Some of these three-point shots, like, these three-point shooting numbers are just weird. Like, he's way off. The last couple of weeks has been way off from three. You know, 5 for 20 against New York, 2 for 13 against Toronto, 4 for 12 against Orlando. He went 1 for 17 in the previous game against Orlando.
That's right.
In the middle of January. But now I'm starting to come around to it. I mean, the argument, not to do a separate topic here, but the argument for Giannis is that all season, the difference between the best player in Milwaukee and the second best player in Milwaukee has been more significant than any top-tier team in the league with their players, right? Like Kawhi and Kyle Lowry, there's a difference, but not as big between Giannis and, say, Chris Middleton. Harden and Chris Paul, Paul George, Russell Westbrook. What Giannis had to do all season long without as much support, I think that gave him the edge to me. But if James Harden keeps this up, going to be impossible not to vote for him.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I think the Bucks are better. I think the Bucks are a good regular season team. I think like Bledsoe, Middleton, and even Lopez and just like Brogdon, I think those guys are all really good. I know they're not on Giannis's level.
Yeah.
I would think that team, and the way they play with Mike Budenholzer actually fits in really well, where the Rockets are just like James. I can't even imagine what would happen if James Harden was out. Like, would they just like, what would happen to the Rockets? Would they win a game?
Look, the starting lineup against the Toronto Raptors, one of the best teams in basketball, one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference that came into that game largely healthy. The starting lineup was James Harden, two buyout pickups in Austin Rivers and Kenneth Faried, a defensive specialist in PJ Tucker and Eric Gordon. And they went out there and led from wire to wire. The Raptors had no leads in that game.
I know. I it's funny, the conversation about MVP, but it's like I am so mind bent by what this guy is capable of doing.
Yeah.
And listen, maybe like the new NBA is that. I would never have guessed someone could be that skilled at basketball, and he is that skilled, and he's also strong as heck, and he's like 6'8", and he finishes, and
that's and just a
like,
great and a great passer, by the way, a great like he's averaging like 8 assists a game. It's like third in the league. Like he's one of the best passers in the league too.
Truly, it's ridiculous.
It's crazy.
All right, now we're going into now you owe me two packs with MeUndies here.
I do. That's what I was going to say. I was going to say I'm going to bring you the extra pack of super small MeUndies, and I'll bring them to the game later in the week.
Okay.
Appreciate it, Scal.
You got it.
All right, that's it for this week's episode. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it, and I'll see you next week.